Welcome to the Parenting is Hard Work podcast. This is Dr. Scott Taransky, and I'm joined with Elena Svetslot from the Netherlands, and we love working with parents. And so we've got all kinds of ideas. These podcasts that we've set up are designed to help you evaluate various areas of parenting. Sometimes we're working with younger children, sometimes older children, but most of the time we're combining younger and older children because they have similar needs just at different developmental stages. So we're talking about a lot of those things together, and today we want to address a very specific subject with you, try to help you understand more about how to help your children when they've lost hope or you've lost hope. Where's hope come from? Those kinds of things. Let's talk about that together. Welcome, Elena. I'm glad you're with me today.
Hi, Dr. Scott, and hi, everyone listening. Yes, a very important topic that we're going to talk about today, especially because most of us parents don't think of it as something that is necessary, maybe to be part of our strategy of parenting. But sometimes our children lose hope because they see themselves constantly making mistakes, and they can feel really disappointed and also really at the edge of hope. So we really wanted to share with parents and all those who look after children or take care of children, how can they help children, help adolescents, young people get back that hope in their lives. And that's also because we, as adults, we need hope. We need hope in our lives because we are sinners. And when we don't trust our own ideas, when we trust our own judgment, we put our hope in God. So that's what we want to do today, Dr. Scott. So how would you define hope, Dr. Scott, in the context of the biblical parenting teaching?
I would suggest there's several ways that and needs that children have when it comes to dealing with hope. Let's try to talk about some different ones. Ultimately, our hope is in God, and so helping children to have a biblical or a spiritual perspective on life helps them to see that they don't get everything they want, and that contentment really comes from something other than just accumulating pleasurable things. And when disappointments happen in our lives, whether it be a loss of a pet or can't go to the soccer game or any kind of disappointment children experience, it's very important for us to be able to rely on our relationship with the Lord, because it's through the Lord that hope ultimately is found. Now, having said that, I think there are other things that parents can do that will increase hope. And one of my favorite passages is the one in Romans chapter 5, verses 3 and 4 that gives four words. Suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope. Four words. You can only control one of those. Suffering comes into our life. Character is a byproduct. Hope is the result. The one we can control is that one called perseverance, which is the plan, which is the ability to deal with the sufferings of life. Mm-hmm. And I think that what we do is we embrace those four words in our whole parenting program at the National Center for Biblical Parenting to try to help children develop more hope. And where does hope come from? It comes from character. And character is a way of thinking and acting in response to a challenge. So when a child sees that their plan, their perseverance, is resulting in character development, it produces hope. They start seeing, oh, wow, I am not having as many temper tantrums as I did before, or I am being able to stick to my tasks and get them done. Or when children develop the character, then hope is the byproduct. So what does that mean for us as parents? I think parents need to help their children experience some suffering. I don't mean we'd be mean to our kids, but I think we put them in controlled, stress-producing situations where we do say no to them more often if the problem is they can't be interrupted or they can't accept no as an answer. We say, we're going to help you by that. We're going to practice saying no so you can practice responding better to a no answer. And so we help them develop the character necessary so that they can move forward. Or we put them in a stressful position by having them play with their brother. I mean, it's not like we're creating all this meanness with our kids, but the point is life produces stress. And so we send them into this stress-producing situation, or we tell them it's going to happen. And then we are on the lookout for solutions and helping them to develop the characters. We're coaching our kids along to develop a greater sense of conquering when it comes to life's challenges. And when they do, then they feel more hope in life. So I think that's another whole dimension of this idea of hope that we need to consider, that we don't just cater to our children, trying to make their life easier, hoping that hope is going to somehow fill the gap. But often hope comes from the hard work we do of parenting and being firm with kids to help them move in the direction they need to move.
Yeah, that's a very interesting way to look at it and to think about it, actually. And I know it can be a bit of a counter idea to what we as parents think. I know many families and many households are trying to keep peace at all costs, or are trying to avoid, let's say, arguments, or avoid moments in which children need to be put or confronted with certain situations. So I think that's actually a very wise idea, Dr. Scott, to bring and to practice situations which are hard for children and which brings out their, let's say, their the points in their heart that are not so well developed, to develop the character and for us to teach them, for us to give them that moment of teaching. How would you coach a parent when somebody wants to do that? For example, let's say that they have siblings always in arguments with each other. We want to bring them in a controlled environment, or, you know, we want to bring them to play together so we can coach them. How would you approach that kind of a situation?
All right. So now you're getting very practical. Well, let me answer that question. Let's say we have two children fighting. Let's say that they're 5 and 7 years old, or and let's say that what we want to do is try to help them develop some strength in this area. Mm. So what we need to do in order to help them be successful, number one, is we work with children independently. We don't sit them both down and say, you guys need to get along. We're going to work with 7-year-olds and say, hey, I know your 5-year-old brother's irritating at times. And so I want to help you know how to relate to him in a way that's more productive. And you'll feel better about this when you do. So we meet with the child independently. We meet with a 5-year-old and say, yeah, I know your 7-year-old brother's can be irritating sometimes. And so I want to help you know how to relate to him so you can do better. So we start there by working with them independently. The second thing we want to do is equip them with a plan. So a basic plan for sibling conflict is to help children realize they have 3 choices, and those are to ignore, or to confront, or to get help. We ignore some problems because we don't want that other person to control us. So ignoring is a great tool that children can use, but they also sometimes need to confront, which means we give them the exact words. Stop. You know, is a good word for children to be able to use with someone. I don't like that. So giving them words to use so they can confront is also a good solution. And then getting help is another solution that children have, so that if they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, then we have more access, or we have the ability to come in and say, hey, here's what you can do. Here's what needs to happen in this particular situation. So helping children know exactly what to do is going to be very important, because we give them a plan, and then I would suggest we send them into situations that are limited in their length. Let's say we say, okay, I think you've got a plan for your brother. I know he can be irritating, but you have some ideas now. Why don't you go in and play with your brother for 5 minutes and see if you can make him happy, or you can come out of that situation in some way that's positive. So we just send them in short missions, because sometimes it's the long periods of time where the conflict brews and develops and so on. So if we can have some success, children feel hopeful. Oh, wow, I did it for 5 minutes. If I did it for 5 minutes, maybe I can do it for 10 minutes and so on. So we're helping children see what this looks like and be able to move forward in some ways that are very positive. The other, another idea is, as we're working with children and giving them solutions, is to equip them to problem solve, because sometimes in sibling conflict, children just don't know how to solve problems well. And so we teach them. This is, we might say, here, you're fighting over this toy. Let's put the toy here on the table. You two sit in chairs facing each other and talk about it and let me know what the solution is. And they sit there and they don't know what to do. So we say to the first child, why don't you start this way? I have an idea. And so we coax them along in the problem-solving process so they can learn communication skills and persuasion and compromise and negotiation. Because if children can develop greater ability to problem-solve, then they don't have to use emotions to solve problems. All of these things that we're doing are helping position children well so that they can make some progress, see the progress, and then we can affirm that progress in their lives. Again, contributing to the hope in their lives.
Yeah, so that's the next point I actually wanted to zoom in a bit, Dr. Scott, which is helping children to see the progress in their lives. Because I think sometimes we as parents don't have necessarily the, I mean, children don't have the awareness that they're getting better, and they need to develop that. But also us as parents don't always have this cue coming to us when we're in situations where our child needs perhaps encouragement or some visioning. We don't always have that habit of sharing with them their and increasing their awareness over their own ability to get better and to see the progress. So that's something very important as well, right? To be able as parents to do that.
Yeah, we call those vision meetings. So if a parent is trying to vision in this particular, there's lots of different ways to vision with kids, and we use those different tools in the program. But one of the things that parents can do is when a child's been successful at something, then we say to them, hey, notice that you're being successful here. And we're drawing attention to character, not so much behavior. So we might say, boy, it looks like you're developing more patience. Do you remember it used to have all these temper tantrums? We're not seeing those now. You seem to be developing patience in your life. This is great. So in that way, what we're doing is we're encouraging this character quality in the child, and it just produces some really good stuff. So yeah, the affirmation is important. I think the way we do it is important. It has to be genuine. And if the child can identify with it and agree with it, you know, they say, oh yeah, look, I am growing. Then hope pours into their hearts. And hope's important because hope drives us forward, helps us when we're discouraged. And so it's really good that we're working on hope in the lives of children. And keeping that in mind, it's, hope's in the heart, and the heart needs the encouragement and the motivation to keep itself moving in the right direction.
Yes, I agree. I think everyone needs hope, including us as parents. So as parents hearing this, giving hope to your children, giving hope to yourself, praying for this hope to increase in our hearts. It's such a powerful method, and that's such a powerful way to see progress and to encourage our children. I would encourage actually parents to have these reminders somewhere visible on when they are at home with their children. I put some of these reminders to myself on the fridge, for example, when I want to remind myself to envision with my son, to talk and affirm him more. I don't always remember it on top of my head. So if I sometimes just am around the kitchen and I look at these notes, I start more often to put that into practice. So I encourage parents to do that, actually, to set themselves reminders somewhere that where they are mostly with their children. Also, keywords such as problem solving, or you know, remind yourselves of these important concepts that you can bring together into the lives of your children, and also important to read in the Bible with your children about hope and about and talk about it with your children, not just amongst parents, you know, among mother and father, to talk about, oh, our child has done so good, or. But to also have this kind of conversations with a child, that's really powerful. Dr. Scott, what do we do when a child is really, let's say it's really difficult for him or her to see hope, and perhaps it's one of those situations where their personality is towards being, let's say, seeing the empty glass more than the full glass. And we struggle as parents, and we don't know really how to get that child in a better position and for them to see hope. What other things can we do? What is your advice there?
All right. So now what you're talking about is what we call a stronghold in a child's life. When a child has a stronghold, that is, they have a deeply seated wound or heart issue or challenge inside of them. How do we bring about change? And we have a In the coaching program, we use 7 tools, and it's a multifaceted approach. So let me just give you a rundown of several things that I think we can do. First of all, we build relationship with kids, because relationship softens the heart, children need the comfort that comes with that relationship. So a relationship is a hopeful thing just in the very fact that it exists. So our relationship with God, of course, brings hope into our lives, but our relationship with our kids also helps our children experience hope in their lives. So relationship is important. The second one is visioning. We've talked about that, is helping children see perspective and to point that out. The third one is firmness. Now, I think that sometimes children need firmness. We say, look, what you're doing right now is complaining, or you're focusing on the wrong thing. And that's not a good thing for you to be doing right now. You need to go sit down and think about it. And I want you to come back and tell me something you're grateful for before we can move forward. So firmness isn't used by itself. Firmness is used with all these other tools, but firmness helps children to do what they really ought to be doing in their own hearts, which says, I can't do what I'm doing right now. I can't be dwelling on the negative. I need to, and firmness encourages that I need to in a child's life. I need to think more positively. I need to be grateful about something. Mm-hmm. So that would help children a lot. Another tool is the spiritual tool, the tool that has to do with understanding God's work in our lives and praying and reading God's word and serving him. So that's another very important tool. And sometimes that's the tool that gets children out of their self-focused mentality to be thinking about other people. Another important tool that we use is the coaching tool, which comes alongside and say, well, looks like you're falling into a trap there. Come on, let me help you get out of that. Why don't you come over here and give me a hug, or let's think of some things we can do together that are positive so that you can be thinking positively. So there's a coaching tool that is very valuable. Another one is transferring responsibility to the child. Because some children blame the problem. My life's terrible because of everybody else. And if everybody else would change, I'd be fine. And so we transfer responsibility to the child. You need to spend some time thinking of something positive that you're going to work on or you're going to think about and come back and tell me what it is. So that's, again, more firmness. But the idea is we're transferring responsibility to the child because it's the child's problem. It's not the parent's job to continually look to make children happy. That's not our job. We want to help children be independent. We want them to grow spiritually. They will be happy if they're doing the right thing, if they have a mission-oriented view of life and so on. So that's also a very important tool. Teaching is another tool. And this teaching tool is one that helps kids understand more about brain pathways, for example, and how you build those negative pathways and they just become the little grooves in your brain that you tend to focus on. And so if you want to change them, then you have to practice changing them. Or creating a journal can be a teaching exercise or other things. So what I'm saying here is that we take these seven tools and we put all those seven tools together and we develop a plan for a child who has a stronghold. If that stronghold is negativity, we can help them with that. If the stronghold is lying or defiance, we're going to address that. These are the deeply rooted issues that children have, and we have to be more strategic in trying to help them to move forward with them.
Yeah, that's very, very wise. And you parents can find more information about this on biblicalparenting.org, on Dr. Scott's website, where, and I know there are several parenting coaching courses that are going to be starting soon. If they haven't already started, Dr. Scott, I don't know where they are at the moment, but all this information are to be found on the website, along with the books that Dr. Scott has written. Parenting is Hard Work is a very good one, which I fully recommend. So thank you so much, Dr. Scott, for all the wise advice you have given us today. Would you like to add anything before we end this episode?
Let me just suggest that sometimes parents find themselves feeling hopeless, and I think that the hope is found, first of all, in a relationship with the Lord, but secondly, in the how. What am I going to do? When parents have a strategy, they kind of figured out what's going on. Oh, now I know what I'm going to work on. Then they feel more hopeful. And so I would say develop the strategy. Start to work on some things with your child, and you'll be able to experience more hope in your own relationship with your kids. If you're stuck, get help. We offer so much help at the National Center for Biblical Parenting. We invite you to be a part of that. So feel free to join us there. So folks, thanks for joining us today on this podcast. We're grateful that you've been with us. We hope that you'll save this podcast or like it so that you can get regular updates when we post new ones. We've got lots more ideas we want to share with you, and we appreciate you joining with us today.